Ryan Dixon and Rory Boylan host Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.
You know, I would be a really great addition over here at the NHL. Maybe you could make me VP of hockey ideas and stuff.
I'm sorry, does this say
Wolves? Yes, Wolves. In overtime, just in the regular season, crazy, we would release a pack of wolves out onto the ice. If the score is still tied after 5 minutes, we release a polar bear.
I don't think I've ever been involved in a bigger waste of time.
But when somebody loses a face-off, the loser then has to undergo face transplant surgery, and then they take on the physical attributes of a ruthless terrorist.
That's the plot of the movie Face Off.
Shanny!
Welcome to Tape the Tape, T2T. I'm Ryan Dixon. I'm a writer for Sportsnet magazine and Sportsnet.ca. Sitting to my left, trying to get a handle on his emotions.
Wow.
It is Sportsnet senior NHL producer, Rory Boylan.
Got my ticket, my trip booked to Las Vegas 2017, opening night of the Las Vegas... We don't know yet.
Las Vegas 21s, shouldn't it be?
I like that.
Yeah.
The Black Knights was the front runner, it seems. I kind of like that too.
We'll kick around some more ideas. I know the Black Jacks is out there.
I'm
going 21s. I like the you know, the 49ers, 67s. There's a few of them out there, but not a lot.
Let's do an expansion draft in the summer for a summer episode.
Oh, 100%. We'll deep dive on that. We're not going to talk too much expansion today because, as noted, we will we'll shelve that for a summer issue. But we are going to talk about Rory's Florida Panthers going out there and locking down Keith Yandle for 7 years. We're going to talk more summer speculation as we're about to enter the serious silly season, if that's not some kind of oxymoron. The draft coming right up, and certainly some deals and big signings around the corner. But we'll kick it off with the NHL awards that were handed out. And just before we do that, a good time to remind you, you can, of course, check out the Tape to Tape podcast on iTunes or on Sportsnet.ca. Check out Rory on Twitter, at Rory Boylan, myself, Dixon on Sports. Yeah, we're just going to kind of run through some of the more notable winners and give our 2 cents. Maybe I'll shed some light on my ballot that was submitted in early April. But yeah, let's just get to it and talk about some of the bigger names out there that walked away with some hardware.
These guys, they've all had great seasons, but only one's going to take home the biggest trophy of the night. And the Hart Trophy goes to Patrick Kane.
This is Patrick Kane's third NHL award of the evening and the fifth of his career. He's the first Chicago Blackhawk to win the Hart since Stan Mikita in 1968.
Woo! First Blackhawk to win the Hart in going on 50 years.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of bad years in there for the
I guess
the
so. Well, what did you think? I had, just to bring the folks up to speed, my Hart Trophy ballot went Patrick Kane, Jamie Benn, Sidney Crosby, Alex Ovechkin, Joe Thornton. I picked the winner.
You picked the winner. You win. What's the grand prize? I obviously not shocking that Patrick Kane won the Hart, led the NHL in scoring, did slow down at the end of the year there. I was curious to see if the allegations around him last summer were going to impact how the voting went for him. But it clearly didn't. He got 121 first-place votes. Sidney Crosby got 11. So
it's a pretty big discrepancy. It was the tape-to-tape. Oh, bam. Tape-to-tape. It was the fact he went wire-to-wire, I thought.
Right.
I mean, the Hawks did stumble a bit, and I feel like he stumbled a little bit or wasn't as productive kind of late February, early March. But, you know, he just... all year was just magic with Panarin, and you know, the only guy obviously with 100 points and winning the scoring race by a fairly substantial margin.
Yeah, it you just can't felt ignore like it was, that.
Yeah,
I mean, he ran away with the scoring title, so you absolutely can't just overlook that. I did think Crosby was going to get more first place votes and make a race out of it because of the way the Penguins turned their season around, and he was the leader of that. Obviously, playoffs aren't a factor here. Their voting is done before that. But as far as the regular season, I thought Crosby was going to give him a bit more of a run than he did.
Well, we've got one big one out of the way. Let's move on to the next award.
And the 2016 Norris Trophy goes to Drew Doughty.
After three Norris nominations, this is Drew Doughty's first win and his first NHL award. He's a two-time Stanley Cup champion with the Kings.
Maybe the most polarizing, well, we'll see. We'll save some of it, too, I guess, for the rookie one. But, yeah, I mean, especially depending on how much you're into the advanced stats, some people would have you believe that Drew Doughty does not belong in a conversation about the absolute best defenseman in the league. To most of us, that feels like a stretch, but I definitely think there was a sense at the very least it was going to be a photo finish. And I would think most people, including myself, had Carlson ahead of Doughty. So my ballot went Carlson, Doughty, Burns, Letang, and I'm forgetting my fifth one because my computer's locked, but I'm going to look at it.
Again here, though, I was surprised that it wasn't closer in terms of first place votes, 93 for Doughty and 46 for Carlson. This was an interesting one because obviously Carlson is the analytics darling in this category.
And he's a player unlike any other in yes. the league, right? Yes.
And we had a couple articles on Sportsnet.ca this year looking at his season, and it really was historic in how he impacted Senators games and how he generated offense. And Doughty isn't that's not the big part of his game, his offense. But he is better in the defensive end. He's a better two-way defenseman than Carlson. And I think it's not like Carlson is a liability in his own
Well, you
end.
Know the argument is that he always has the puck, so who cares,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. But Doughty is, I think it's going to be hard for you to argue that Carlson is better defensively, that he's the better all-around defenseman than Doughty is. But I was surprised again that Doughty ran away with
big
this.
Time.
This one
big
got
time surprise.
The best reaction in the newsroom last night
yeah.
because everybody knew who's going to win on this one. Is it going to be the analytics crowd or is it going to be the old crew? And when it happened, Doughty, I slammed the table. Everybody's like, "Whoa, oh my God!" Some of the guys that were
slammed
happy
in
that,
celebration.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Because you know what bothers me sometimes about the analytics side of things is, well, actually, you can't vote for anybody but Erik Karlsson because
yeah.
all this. And like, well, you can have differing opinions here.
That's
right. Still okay.
It's the drop the mic nature,
yes.
isn't it?
Like, and it's the stuff that really bugs me is when you look at Drew Doughty and you're making the case that Jake Muzzin is a better defenseman than Drew Doughty, or some of these other middling, you know, still pretty good defensemen are better than Drew Doughty. When the numbers are telling you that, maybe it's time to take more into consideration here. Because Jake Muzzin is not a better defenseman than
yeah.
Drew Doughty. And just kind of realize, okay, step back for a second from the spreadsheets and the numbers and really look at this, not so much just by the numbers. Look at it.
Absorb a little more.
Exactly. And I think Doughty is a deserving winner here. I was just shocked that it wasn't closer.
Josi was my fifth one. So I had Carlson, Doughty, Burns, Letang, Roman Josi. All right, on to the next award.
To my family, thank you so much. Mom, you're going to make me cry.
And the winner is Brendan Holdby.
Brendan Holdby is the third Capitals goaltender to win the Vezina Trophy, joining Jim Carrey and Olaf Kolzig.
So I believe it was Doughty who was going to cry, looking at his mom, touching moment. And man, do you not miss the accent of the Dominator, Dominic Hasek. Remember who did a spot on Hasek? This is just coming to me now. What we're talking about is Ray Emery. He could do Dominic Hasek to Czech T. So
I'd
good.
Have to look at that again.
God, someday let's get Ray Emery on here just to do his Dominic Hasek. But yeah, Holtby was doing his best Dominic Hasek, though he didn't really have to save the Caps bacon the way the Dominator did for Buffalo back in the day. This one, I think, is kind of a, yeah, sure, of
yeah,
course.
I don't think we need to spend much time on this one. This was a slam dunk, I think, from basically
yeah.
the beginning of the season. Holtby ran away with the Vezina, and if it was close, that would have been shocking. This was Holtby's going away, for sure.
All right, that's all we need for that one. Moving on.
And the word goes to Artemi Panarin.
the 30-goal milestone. He's the first Blackhawk to win the Calder since his line mate, Patrick Kane, won it in 2008.
I guess when you're giving out the rookie of the year, you just get a kid up there because it's for the young guys in the league. This one, I mean, it just was a fascinating race because of the fact McDavid only played 46 games, I think. So I'll just, I didn't do my Vezina ballot. Well, that's because we don't vote for the Vezina. Calder for me. I'll give you my ballot and then tell you how I went against my own logic. I had Gostisbehere 1, McDavid 2, Panarin, Jack Eichel, Corbin Parayko. In my mind, to some degree, you either had McDavid first or not on the ballot because it was you looked at it as like essentially you did not qualify, right?
Right.
That you believe you have to play a certain amount of games to qualify. Then, as I said, I, you know, completely went against my own logic and put him second because I just couldn't stomach not having him on there. Yeah, I don't know. What's your take? I mean, no one in the world thinks that anyone other than Connor McDavid was the best rookie to play hockey in the NHL this year. But for me, with Gostisbehere, it was just the crazy amount of crucial goals he scored for Philly, and he was a defenseman. So, sure, he's a little older, and people seem to, you know, jump on that a bit, but it didn't work against Panarin, obviously. So I don't know. There's any number of ways you could have gone with this one. At the end of the day, are you going to take exception to Panarin getting when he had whatever it was, 77 points?
Yeah, and I think part of the thing around Panarin too was his age, that he's 24. And well, no, he's not really a rookie because he's played professionally and he's 24 years old. But you can't hold that against the guy. You can't have that as a reason why you don't vote for him, because by the NHL rules, he is a rookie. Those, so when you're voting on the rookie award, you got to count him as a rookie. He had a great season. I thought here too, McDavid, it's a little surprising that he finished third in the voting. 25 first place votes, 33 for Gostisbehere, 88 for Panarin. It's interesting though, because this was all about how you interpret the best season for a rookie. Did McDavid play enough games? Obviously not enough for the voters thought that he had played enough games, but he was the best rookie. In the games he did play, he was the best rookie in the NHL as far as I am concerned.
Well, yeah, there's no one is debating that.
For me, if I had a vote, I would have voted for Connor McDavid for that reason. But I understand people not wanting to give him the first place vote because he played barely over half of the season. How do you define it? You can talk about this for a whole bunch of awards. How do you define the Selke? How do you define the Hart Trophy, most important to your team, most valuable to your team? How do you define what is the best season for a rookie? Do you have to play all the games, or is being as dominant as McDavid was for the 40 however many games he played?
No center had a better points per game number than Connor McDavid.
I mean, that's amazing.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I thought Parayko was going to get a little bit more love here too. Not that he was going to win, but
tough
he was
field,
way down
tough
behind
field.
John Gibson and Max Domi. I thought Parayko made a bit more of an impact.
Had him number five on my list.
You got him.
All right.
Thank you. I'm very happy.
And this year's Jack Adams Award goes to Barry Trotz.
Barry Trotz has coached in the NHL for 17 seasons and is ninth on the all-time wins list. This is his third Jack Adams nomination and his first win.
I mean, nice recognition for Barry Trotz, and probably about the same as Holtby. Like, yeah, sure, of course. I mean, the Caps were so good start to finish. Let's face it, this guy's at the point in his career where, I mean, nice that he could finally win it, but come on. He wants the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, for sure.
That's what he's after, and that's what that team's after.
I just think it's nice that a coach won the award who has a good team.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
He earned it
wasn't a turnaround maestro this year.
Yeah, usually it goes to the coach who had the best goalie and who led the team to way more wins than anybody expected at the start of the year, and that's what always bugs me about the Jack Adams Award. Mike Babcock has never won a Jack Adams. How has Joel Quenneville not won with Chicago?
You know?
So this time, at least, they got the coach that really earned it. He's really got a reputation for being a great coach.
Absolutely.
Comes into Washington, does a great job here. I thought Gerard Gallant, if it was going to go the way it usually goes, I thought Gerard Gallant was going to get in there. He finished second in the voting. Bruce Boudreau, I thought, deserved a little bit more love here, finishing fourth in the voting, three first-place votes overall. That turnaround in Anaheim this year was amazing, and it happened after he changed the way they played. So I thought he was
going
to get a little
more. It's true, that was a big, quote-unquote, in-game adjustment, big in-season adjustment there.
And even here, talking about how you define awards, Mike Sullivan didn't coach the full season for Pittsburgh, but you could make the case that he had the most impact on his team and how he turned that team around. Him and Boudreau would be really good comparisons that regard. But Trotz, I mean, you can't really argue with what he did here in Washington. Deserved winner.
So we won't. One more clip.
And the winner is, open it up, Teller, Jim Rutherford.
Jim Rutherford has won two Stanley Cup championships as a general manager. In 2006 with the Carolina Hurricanes and this past season with the Pittsburgh Penguins. This is his first NHL award.
I'm honored to receive this award. To me, it's a team award. Starts with our ownership, Mario Lemieux, Ron Burkle, David Morehouse, Travis Williams.
I thought I left this in my office, sorry. What was the second part? Oh, Sprong, I'm sorry. Yeah.
And I have to thank our coach, Mike Sullivan. What an incredible job Mike did. He came in. He turned our season around. He immediately connected with the players and instilled a system that the players could be successful with.
Does somebody want to check this to make sure I didn't screw it up? Just you, Sam? Okay. Okay, sorry. Sorry.
And, of course, to the players. What a terrific group of guys, real character guys, led by the leadership of Sidney Crosby and his great play that he won the Conn Smythe Trophy. And also to hockey operations, what a great group of guys I have that helped me build this team.
Jim Rutherford, then and now.
Is it a shame that with all the success Jim Rutherford has had in his career, that every time I hear his name now, I'm going to think of that episode with the phone?
Oh, it was amazing. It was amazing. that was, of course, back in December, I think, when they were introducing Mike Sullivan as the new coach. And, well, Jimmy was having a bit of an old man moment there, trying to get a hold of his technology. But no such problems accepting the award for GM of the Year, which is voted on, I believe, after the second round of the playoffs. So that certainly helped raise his esteem in the eyes of others. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, hey, the guy went out and traded for all three members of the Kessel, Bonino, Hagelin line that was so integral to Pittsburgh winning the cup. I guess we can't take too much exception to it.
No, I wonder if the voting was done after the regular season before the playoffs started, I wonder how much that would have impacted Dale Tallon, who finished fourth in the voting here. Obviously, they fell out in the first round, but he had done such a good job drafting and building with that team. It's unfortunate that he's not the GM there anymore. He's not going to be able to see that through the end. What's up with that? He gets kicked out of Chicago after building a really good team there and kind of bungling those RFA contracts to
Versteeg,
I think. Yeah, if I remember right. And now in Florida, he's having all this great success and they boot him out of there too. So I wonder how much that would have impacted, but you can't argue with Jim Rutherford. Like you said, he brought together that HBK line. We talked about on the show last week how the problem around Pittsburgh for a number of years was the team's lack of depth and how they didn't seem to have a plan that they would stick to, and they had a real tough time acquiring depth to surround their star players with. And not only did he add another star player, he got a whole bunch of depth put around them too. So great job by Jim Rutherford. Another guy, Brian McClellan, I wonder how much it would have impacted the voting if that one was done after the regular season. He might have won the award if it was done at that point. But best job by a GM this year has to be Jim Rutherford, especially when you look at it in hindsight now. They won the
Stanley
Cup. Well,
yeah, you know what's funny about the GM award? Usually it's like, well, there's no point in even voting. Like, whoever the best GM in 2016 is usually evident in 2018. But this year, maybe it actually applies
yes.
directly because he went out and got those guys this year and they won the Stanley Cup this year. So the, you know, typically there's not a real immediacy to the GM of the Year award, but not necessarily the case this year. We'll just run through the rest and then maybe we can talk about ballots if you want a little bit. Ted Lindsay Award. Voted by the players, Patrick Kane. I mean, what are we going to say? That's who the players believe is the and noted most outstanding player. And I, definitely when you use that terminology, I don't know how you could pick anyone other than the electrifying Kane. The King Clancy Award, of course, leadership on and off the ice, humanitarian contribution, Henrik Sedin. I mean, he and his brother have been pillars in the Vancouver community now for, you know, veering toward two decades, which is crazy to think. And then the, I can reveal my ballot here for the master or sorry, for the, Lady Bing and the Selke. Boom. Kopitar wins both. I had him at the top of both. I had Selke was Kopitar, Bergeron, Stahl, Thornton, Couturier, Lady Bing, Kopitar, Barkov, Louis Erickson, Joe Pavelski, Patrick Marleau, and then I'll save the Florida Panther for last, the Masterton. I mean, who else has showed more dedication to hockey than 44-year-old Jaromir Jagr?
Yeah, it can't get much better than that. Who could win that award over Jagr?
Yeah, pretty tough. Though he did get one vote, first place vote for the Hart Trophy.
He
I
did.
Know that is driving your thoughts that maybe ballots should be revealed. I know we talk about this every year.
Yeah, it's something you talk about every year, and Erik Karlsson was completely left off somebody's ballot.
Yeah, that's
so
crazy.
So that needs to, you need to have some light shed on that. I don't think it would have impacted the voting enough that it would have lifted Karlsson above Doughty, but to not include him, something is up there. And there are a couple other one-off first place votes here and there that are a little mystifying. You know what was maybe the most shocking thing of the night is the King Clancy Memorial Trophy Award for leadership on the ice and humanitarian contribution went to Henrik Sedin. What does PK Subban have to do?
Got a bigger check. 10 mil doesn't get it done anymore.
Holy cow.
He'll win it some year. It's just, I feel like it's one you win maybe more when you're 35 than when you're 25. But yeah, nice job throughout all his time in Vancouver by Mr. Sedin. That about does it for the hardware. We filled up everyone's trophy cabinet. We're gonna cut short the awards talk and get on to some of the more juicy stuff that might be ahead, including getting Rory's take on the big Yandle deal. We got the draft coming up, and my God, we may have some Steven Stamkos sweepstakes. It's gonna get real interesting. That's all coming up next on the second segment of Tape to Tape.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet magazine, here's Dan Robson.
We'll remember Gordie Howe for his untouchable 5 decades in pro hockey. We'll remember him for his vicious elbows and polite humility, for his 4 Stanley Cups, for his physical longevity, for conquering the limits that we weren't able to. We remember Mr. Hockey for the thrills we were alive to see and for those sepia-toned tales passed down through the decades. We remember him for being the greatest player the game had known, and when that was done, for staying with us, never retreating from our adoration, for remaining Mr. Hockey until it was finally time to go. In a special commemorative edition, Sportsnet magazine honors the life and legacy of the incomparable Gordie Howe.
That story and more can be found in the latest issue of Sportsnet magazine on newsstands now. And available on texture by next issue or by downloading the Sportsnet magazine app for Apple, Android, and Windows tablets and phones.
The first overall selection in the 2016 NHL draft belongs to Toronto Maple Leafs.
Strange brew, killing what's inside of you. She's a witch of trouble in electric blue. In her own mad mind, she's in love with you. With
welcome
you.
Welcome back to Tape to Tape. Lots of things to speculate about at this particular moment in time, but also some done deals that we don't have to speculate about. We can pick apart because they've already happened. We've got, of course, as reference, Keith Yandle signing a 7-year deal to play for the Florida Panthers. Cap hit. There they are.
Yeah.
Cap hit coming in about 6.4. Alex Goligoski, Yandle's old team in Phoenix, ostensibly kind of replacing him, even though he's been with the Rangers for a little while. But, you know, guy in the sort of the same mold, you'd say, I guess. Goligoski, yeah. 5 years, 5.4, did we say?
Yeah, 5.475.
And
I'd rather have Yandle, though.
Sure. Oh, sure. Yeah. Sure. And, of course, the Leafs going out and nabbing Freddie Anderson from the Anaheim Ducks and then turning around and signing him to a 5-year contract, not fooling around. The number there coming in, what is, 5 on the nose. So yeah, 5 for 5. What do you think of the Freddie Anderson / Leafs acting now, taking steps to be better when maybe some thought they would ride it out and, you know, sort of willingly not be as good next year in the hopes of once again drafting very high?
I think it definitely shows this is the first step towards not being totally crap again next year. They don't want to keep being bad because it gets hard to break out of that cycle of losing and getting high draft picks if you just keep losing and losing and losing. Look at the Edmonton Oilers. You have a tough time getting out of that losing culture. So it's the first step in that. And I think a lot of people don't think Bernier is as bad as this season.
I actually think that's going to be really interesting.
Yeah. So then you're going to have a situation where if Bernier does, well, first of all, if he even starts next season with Toronto and he does kind of have a bounce back, then you're in a situation where, well, now you have to move probably him before the expansion draft.
He's not going to be Anderson.
When you might lose him for nothing, especially if he does have a good season coming back. But I kind of think they're going to trade Bernier before we get to that point because you don't want to find yourself in a situation where you're getting up to the trade deadline and you got to trade him for whatever you can get at that moment and not lose him for nothing in the summer.
The problem with trading for Jonathan Bernier is at this point,
there's nothing.
You can't trade for him and say, okay, we just solved our goaltending problem. Like, you kind of have to bring him into a situation where you've got another option. But in the same breath, I would say it would be really helpful for him to go somewhere where they go, don't worry, you're the guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of a catch-22 there.
And I guess if the Leafs trade him now in the offseason, well, they bought him when he was high, and they're selling him when he's as low as he's going to get.
Yeah, totally.
Right?
You can't imagine you're going to get too much for him.
I guess it makes more sense to hang on to him for the start. Yeah, I'm going to change my mind on that. It makes more sense to hang on.
Build him up a bit.
Let him play. Try and get his numbers back to respectability, and then maybe you can trade him for something. The goalie market's always hard because there's never really a lot there. You don't really get a ton for your goalies, and if you're trading Bernier, who's on a low value right now, you're not going to get a whole lot back for him. But it's going to be interesting because this can't be the only thing Toronto does if they're wanting to be a competitive team next year. You're still going to need to do something with your forward unit and probably your defense.
I mean, I don't necessarily see it as this is their declaration they want to be a good team next year. I see it more as this is the guy Lou Lamoriello and the rest of the team like, and he's up now. So maybe in a perfect world, it would have been next year. But if the guy you want is up now, you can't leave it to chance. And as Lamoriello said, you know, the price you pay is sometimes less important than the fact you got the guy. And I would say, I mean, do we know if Frederick Anderson is going to be a top flight NHL goalie? I do not think we can safely say that.
No.
The point is, clearly Lamoriello thinks that, and he thought that about Corey Schneider, and he gave up a 9th overall pick to get him. Mm-hmm. We don't know exactly what he thought about Marty Brodeur when he drafted him 20th or 21st overall way back in the early 90s for the Devils, but he was right on that. So he does have a kind of a nice track record there for what it's worth. But yeah, I mean, everyone who's saying, well, they shouldn't be worried about a goalie yet, you know what? Who knows what the goalie market is? Who's available next year? yeah, I guess there's going to be some movement because of the expansion draft, but I think if you like this guy and he's 26 years old, I mean, it's not like he's 33.
Yep. Prime years, you'll have him for,
prime
right?
years. Anyways, so what about this Yandel deal as a invested Floridian fan?
I love it, and it's taken a lot of flack for how much he's getting paid against the cap and the length of it, but when you look at Florida's defense, first of all, Brian Campbell is unsigned and is looking like he's going to go to free agency.
I have to believe the writing's on the wall there when they get Yandel.
Yeah. So if you lose him, that's a big, big hole. Yeah, he was overpaid with the Florida Panthers, whatever. He was really effective with them. Really good puck mover, which is so important. And if you just lose that, there's not really another guy who's going to step in and fill that. Ekblad is not so much about just the offense. You still need a guy who's going to drive some offense. And Keith Yandel, 29 years old, this is perfect. And he's getting paid about $800,000 less than Brian Campbell was being paid. So you're even saving some money on a younger defenseman who's bringing kind of thing. Yeah, way younger. 8 years younger.
Yeah.
He's bringing the same kind of thing, and he's probably better.
Well, and like Campbell, he's the kind of guy who figures to age well, too. You know, like, I mean, defensemen in general obviously tend to do better into their 30s than forward sometimes. But the way Yandel plays, he's the kind of guy who at 36, when this deal is up, do you expect him to be that different than he is at 29? Because
he's not going to be the same.
Is Campbell
but
that different than he was when he was 31? I don't think
so. Campbell was 37 and he just had a really good year. And he was a very important player for the Panthers. So I don't think you can just write it off as this is definitely going to be a horrible contract by the end. He might be overpaid. He probably will be overpaid by the end of it. But he is the only defenseman Florida has right now who is signed beyond this season. Sorry, Michael Matheson is as well. It's just those two guys after this season. So you need some security there to know what you're moving ahead with. And it's easy, I think, to say, well, that's too many years and that's too much money and it's not worth it. Florida's a young team and they just need to kind of be deliberate with this. The reality is Luongo's getting old and you are kind of, especially after what you saw from this team last year, you're kind of in a mode now where you got to start winning with this team that hasn't won for 20 freaking years. You know, you have to make that drive at some point, especially as a Florida Panthers fan or a Florida Panthers owner. Are you going to be pleased if this Las Vegas team comes into the league next year and has any more success than you do over their first 3 years?
Right.
You're going to be pretty angry if that team comes in and is any better than these Florida Panthers. So Yandel is a guy who is exactly the type of player that they need. They were able to get him before free agency, able to bid on him before then, and they got him for, I think when you compare him to some UFA deals over the years, it's not that bad.
Yeah.
And he's still going to be a good puck-moving guy by the end of this deal. That's the cost of doing business.
Well,
if you want to ice a good team, you're going to need to throw down some of these contracts from time to time. That's
my
the reality.
My biggest pet peeve with contract talk is that people talk about them like we live in this utopian world where they're going to make perfect sense the whole time. That's not how it works. Like you're going to eat it on one end of it, typically the back end, based on what your priorities are right now. And if you're trying to win in the next 4 years, then, you know, like, do you think Pittsburgh cares what Phil Kessel's going to look like at the end of his contract now?
Exactly.
No, nobody cares in Pittsburgh. They won the friggin' Stanley Cup.
Exactly. You can have a plan that you take your time with to develop, like a team like Toronto, a team like Buffalo, that you can take your time. You're not in any crazy.
Yeah, there's teams that can't, it doesn't make sense to sign a quote-unquote bad contract.
Exactly. But there comes a point where you are going to be in a situation where you have to make a call where it's, okay, if we do this, it's deviating from our plan a little bit. We're going to put down a little bit more money or a few more years than we were planning to at this stage. But this is a guy we need to win right now to help us get to that next step right now. And if that's what it's going to cost us to do it, well, then that's what we have to do. I think what is forgotten a lot of the time when we're talking about contracts is that this is still an entertainment business. And this is driving a lot of buzz around the Florida Panthers right now, around that community, the fans and everything. They want to build on what they had last year. If you lose Brian Campbell and you don't replace him with Keith Yandel or somebody like that, and you're not going to be able to unless you pay somebody this kind of money, if you just leave that void and this team takes another downturn, well, you've just lost all this momentum that you've built up. It's so important. You have to consider the team. It's so important for this team to win. They have to win or they're doomed for the future. And it's good that they now have an owner who's willing to spend. It sounds like he's willing to spend to the cap. They still have $16 million in cap space left to work with, and they have to sign Vincent Trocheck, but they're still going to have tons of cap space to work with. This is why they moved Mark Savard's contract off the books to New Jersey in that deal, to free up some cap space to do some things here. And this is what they're doing. Great move for the Florida Panthers. Easy to say that it's a bad move, but give me a break. This is exactly the kind of guy they need.
A lot of that actually would apply to, in some ways, to Phoenix signing Goligoski, right? I mean, there's a team that's just got to start getting some wins. There are teams hoping they secure future wins with the guys they draft on Friday in Buffalo. At this point, you know, to use the term I feel like I never heard until about a year and a half ago, and I hear all the time, if things go chalk, it's going to be Austin Matthews, Patrick Laine, Matthews to the Leafs, Laine to the Jets, Jesse Puljujärvi to the Jackets, though it sounds like maybe the Jackets will do something. What do you think after that? I mean, in terms of either Edmonton moving four, in terms of other teams, I mean, I don't know. It kind of feels like this happens every year, but when you look at the characters involved, you know, you've got a team in Edmonton that, like, my goodness, how much more young talent could it possibly want? You can certainly see the motivation for trading the fourth overall pick away, especially when they desperately need some defensemen. Kind of the same thing with Calgary. I mean, the Flames already are really stocked. Could they potentially even just trade down? What do you think in terms of what we're going to see, and maybe rhyme off a couple of the kids after number three who you think are going to be interesting?
Yeah. Well, out of the Canadian teams, I would think that Edmonton would be the most likely to make a move at this point, right? I think all the mock drafts that we posted on Sportsnet.ca, four in total, all of them had Edmonton taking Matthew Tkachuk, which is great. I mean, he's a power forward. There's a lot to like about this guy, but it's another winger. It's another forward for the Edmonton Oilers. And the best defenseman available is probably either Mikhail Sergachev or Ole Juolevi, but they're not expected to go until a couple picks later.
It would be a bit of a reach, right?
And
the Oilers probably want a defenseman that can play next October.
True. Yes. So if I'm picking a Canadian team, I think they are most likely to make a move. It sounds like Columbus is kind of in there, although Jarmo Kekalainen yesterday said he wasn't moving the third. That's what he's going to say, of course.
And I think because there's been so much Line A love because of the way he played at the Worlds, and you know, because of his, let's call it interesting, interview from his bedroom in the wee hours after the lottery. There's been a lot of Line A talk, lost in the shuffles. Puljujärvi's supposed to be a real player.
Well, there was a buzz today that Winnipeg was considering taking Puljujärvi
too.
Yeah,
there you go.
Another interesting wrinkle here is Sam Cosentino's mock draft that he did for us. He had Puljujärvi falling to five with the caveat that he thought Columbus was going to trade that pick, and the team that would acquire the pick was going to do it to move up ahead of the teams to grab either Tkachuk or Dubois. That's
really
who they would be interested in. That's why they would make that move. So that's interesting. Can you imagine?
So
if
someone trades up to three and takes Dubois or Tkachuk, then at
that
four.
Was the logic here. Yes.
And that, so he had him falling to four to five.
To five in the Vancouver Canucks, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it's incredible to me because remember all season long, Puljujärvi was the number two guy. And Laine really came on late in the season when he played excellent in the playoffs in the Finland League and then was even better
MVP
in the World Championship.
As an 18-year-old at
exactly.
the World, man. That's big.
Puljujärvi stood out in December at the World Juniors, December, January at the World Juniors. Great tournament there. So for him to fall that far that quickly is, whenever a guy at the top of the draft falls that far that quickly, or in the minds of people is he's been holding the number one spot or the number two spot all year, and then in the last month or two before the draft he starts falling, then I start to wonder if you're kind of overthinking it a little bit. And it's usually around the guy who's number one. When John Tavares was number one, well, in the lead-up to the draft, it was, should Matt Duchene go before John Tavares? And in Taylor Hall's year, it was, should Tyler Seguin go?
Let me jump in right now, because I just thought of this, though. You are starting a team tomorrow. Would you take Tavares or Victor Hedman?
Wow, that's a good question. I probably would take Tavares.
You're
would not considering you? Contracts, eh?
No, I just mean like...
Yeah, I think both are so important positions, but I think I would rather take the center.
Ooh,
yeah, that's a tough call, though.
Anyway, I just thought I'd jump in because that was juicy. Who teams are going to take is obviously the biggest question at the draft, but man, right behind is who might be on the move, and with this expansion draft driving some things. What do you think? I mean, we talked about Florida. My goodness, the other Florida team. Forget not just the Stamkos thing. The real juicy goalie question out there, considering teams can only protect one, isn't Fleury Murray. It's Bishop Vasilevsky.
Yeah.
Especially given Bishop has one more year left on his deal. Whew, that's going to get real interesting.
And you have Calgary sitting out there needing a goalie.
Dallas, I mean, I know they're supposedly going to stick by the Finnish duo, but we could really see some stuff. And I know Chris Johnson, I mean, the way things happen fast and furious around the drafts, God knows by the time you're listening to this, there could be, you know, heaven and earth could have moved already. But CJ was saying, I'm hearing some names out here that you wouldn't necessarily expect to. The whole PK Subban thing won't completely go away. I think there's probably not much there, but any one thing, I mean, it's got to be Stamkos still, right? That's the one thing that you're most curious to see how it plays out.
Yes. Yeah.
Buffalo going after VC or Vesey. I still don't think we've pinned this down. And mentioned seriously in the Stamkos mix.
Yeah. And another thing, cause I've always, and I've said this number of times before on this show, that my gut feeling is Montreal. I wonder, like, you can't, if they sign Stamkos, they have to trade out a contract, probably Plekanec, I'm guessing.
They would
like
probably
that.
Try to move. They would probably desperately hope someone would take Alexi Emelin, but yes, they would have to move something out.
You can't do that without knowing that you're going to get Stamkos. So I wonder if Tampa Bay trades rights at some point here to Stamkos, if they give up on signing him, where they might go, and if Montreal might be that team so that they can start negotiating with him and get an idea on whether or not they need to move one of these contracts before too long. You do have time in the summer. You can go over the cap by, I think, 20%.
10%.
10% in the summertime. So you can have some time to maneuver here. But yeah, of all the trades that we're talking about that could happen, all the big names out there, will the rights be traded? Because the window for negotiating with free agents opens actually on the Saturday. So it would have to be on the Thursday night or the Friday leading up to or during the draft that you'd have to acquire Stamkos' rights just to get a little bit of a jump on everybody else.
Technically, I believe technically you can't talk actual term and dollars during the footsie period.
But you can.
But give me a break.
Chat. Yeah, you're going to get an idea.
A real good idea.
I think we know what Stamkos is going to get.
My favorite numbers are 8 and 102. Yeah. You know, like, come on.
So his is the big one. But yeah, Ben Bishop's name has definitely been floating out there as well.
And really
Calgary, like we're saying, Calgary needs a goalie. I wouldn't even come close, though, to trading the number 6 pick for Ben Bishop, unless you're talking about some kind of a bigger deal where like a Drouin is involved.
You wouldn't, would you?
Something.
What if you could get his name on a 5-year extension? Wouldn't do it?
No, because for me, goalies are so dangerous. You can definitely, you have to be careful in how much you spend on your cap towards goalies. You also have to be careful what you're going to give up for them in a trade, because you can get a goalie who is good enough for you to lead you to something really good. Like Martin Jones for San Jose this year is a perfect example. Great goalie, but they got him for dirt cheap. And you can get those guys who can come in and you get an idea that they're going to be effective enough for you. I don't think you need to trade a ton for a goalie like Bishop. I don't think you need to do it. I think you can get your goalies elsewhere. I wouldn't go out and I wouldn't spend $7 million on a goalie anymore. I wouldn't trade the 6th overall pick for a goalie, especially Calgary just missed the playoffs and they are still building. They would
Bishop
definitely they would benefit by getting an Alex Nylander or a Dubois or a Sergachev or whoever's there when they pick. I think they'd be better suited to do that. And I think there are other ways to get your goalie. And I think you probably could get someone like, say, Marc-Andre Fleury for cheaper than that. And not even just Marc-Andre Fleury. I think you could get some other goalie into a tandem situation here. You're not going to pay for as much in contract or in trade. I think you got to be careful with goalies.
You have to be careful, but I really feel the pendulum has swung too far the other way here, where people say, well, goalies are overvalued. You can just go find one on the scrap heap. Yeah, well, if it was that easy, you wouldn't see coaches pulling their hair out because they can't get a save. And to me, there's a difference between saying we can figure it out and we can find someone decent and, well, we can go get someone who has a pretty good body of work over, you know, the past 1, 2, 3, 4 seasons. And yes, I understand in a vacuum, Ben Bishop probably isn't worth the 6th overall pick. But when you look at the situation and you go, Calgary has a lights out defense, assuming Dougie Hamilton gets, he'll, you know, still becomes a player we think he's going to be after 1 year adjustment there. They have Monahan as a number one and Bennett as a number two. They got the goods, Johnny Gaudreau, as an almost point per game player on the wing. Man, to me, now if I can go out there and say, I'm not fooling around with the scrap heap, I'm not playing tandem games, I'm not playing, you know, hopefully Freddie Anderson's good. I'm playing, you know, here's a guy who's been on this very good team and has very good numbers for, you know, the past few years, and he still plays, he plays what is still the most important position in terms of how much he can help your team instantly. I would think long and hard about if you're going to give up a first and a second for unproven Anderson, mostly unproven, I don't know, a sixth for a much more known entity.
The contract is key because you're only guaranteed one year. 100%,
100%, not for, yeah,
he's
I
a
agree.
UFA.
Yeah, I have to have his name. I have to have assurances.
Yeah,
yes.
He's a UFA, so especially in a market where we're trading for goalies is...
Well, they'll be out there.
Hard.
They will be out there, though, because of the expansion draft. You're right. I mean, you could make the Fleury argument, but ultimately, too, I would say, if you'd rather have Bishop than Fleury, then I don't care that I can get Fleury for a little cheaper. I want Ben Bishop.
It also matters, too, if you think the Calgary Flames are a goalie like that away from getting back into the playoffs and doing something, because he's going to be 30 years old here when that contract expires.
You know what, though? Like, Gaudreau, third year, Monahan going into his fourth year. It's not like they got a bunch of 19-year-olds. I do think that they could be. And, yeah, that's an interesting fit to me. Really interesting fit. Anyway, lots of speculation at this point. Going to be far more facts the next time we talk to you. We're going to, of course, drop in after the draft. We're going to sort out some draft winners, draft losers. We're going to talk about the litany of trades that we're sure are going to go down and probably tee up a little July 1. Man, sometimes you're glad when the Stanley Cup's won so you can get on to like the really fun stuff. Like,
yeah.
It is this time of year, and of course, TTT has you covered. You already know this by now, I'm sure, but check us out on iTunes. Check us out on sportsnet.ca. Rory is on Twitter, at Rory Boylan. I'm at Dixon on Sports. That's all we have for you this time, but check back next week for more Glass Rattlin' hockey action on Tape to Tape.
Been Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.